Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, thrilled to have you here. This is going to be an epic one. Want to let you know, if it's your first time here at Modern Day Debate, we are a nonpartisan channel focused on hosting debates on science, religion, and politics. And so we want to let you know, no matter what walk of life you come from, we really do hope you feel welcome. If you love juicy debates on controversial topics, we want to let you know, this coming Friday, we will have the Flat Earth Debate to end all Flat Earth debates, as Aaron Raw and Nathan Thompson will be going one-on-one. So that should be an epic one. And hey, if you want reminders of debates like that, hit that subscribe button, as we have many more debates to come. So with that, we're going to get rolling on this one. Very exciting stuff. I want to let you know first, we are thrilled to have our guests here. We really appreciate these guys. And amazingly, though being regulars on the channel, I mean, we've been having you guys on for it's got to be over a year. Like, could it be 2 years? It's going on 2 years, I think. So they've never actually crossed swords before. They've never debated, which I'm like, how is that? Okay, for tonight, we're going to have a fairly flexible format, namely about 5 to 10 minutes, and that's up to the speakers on whether or not they want to use that 5 to 10 minutes for their kind of open position statement, and then open dialogue followed by Q&A. So if you happen to have a question, feel free to fire that question into the old live chat. If you tag me with @ModernDayDebate, makes it easier for me to get every question in the list that we'll try to work through before we run out of time. So we can't guarantee that we'll get to read everything, but just tag me with @ModernDayDebate if you'd like to enter a question. Super Chat is also an option, in which case it'll push your question to the top of the list, and we appreciate that support. Really does mean a lot, folks. We are excited about the future, as we have a lot of epic stuff planned. Once this pandemic starts to loosen up, we really do have a lot of plans for traveling debates. So kind of like going on tour, you could say, down to, you know, maybe even the Texas, Oklahoma area. You never know. So anyway, want to say thanks so much to our guests. They are linked in the description. I'm a little bit behind. I've got to double check to be sure that it's in there. If it's not, I'm going to be putting their links in right now. So that if you would like to hear more from either Jim or Praise, you can hear more by clicking on those links during the debate. And with that, thanks so much, though, guys, for being with us. Glad to have you back.
Likewise, this is going to be a good discussion, Jim. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. The pleasure is all ours. So, thanks so much.
Wait, I mean, I'm happy to be here.
Thank you so much. And, yeah, we really appreciate you going the extra mile for this debate in that epic costume.
I mean, it's the least that I could do, you know, being the heathen that I am. I had to, you know, just give it a little effort.
What a sweet heathen. All right. So with that, we are very excited to give it over to Praise to make his opening statement. So with that, Praise, the floor is all yours.
Awesome. Getting ready to get this rocking here. So how do I share the screen thingy, James?
So there's a green button, bottom middle of the Zoom window. And once click that.
Boom. All right, here it is, demons, and the contents of this presentation is evidence for demonology and PSI, evidence for demons and angels and documented miracles. So to get started, we're going to start with PSI. What is PSI? So PSI is parapsychology. In the peer-reviewed paper referenced below, which I'm going to blow up for everyone, provides extensive evidence for PSI, known as parapsychology. What does PSI consist of? The definition straight from Webster's dictionary is as follows: a field of study concerned with investigation of evidence from the paranormal, telepathy, clairvoyance, psychokinesis. The paranormal, by definition, means supernatural or beyond science. However, what's incredible is the amount of evidence for PSI is paralleled with the field of general psychology, which means there's thousands upon thousands of papers as outlined below. In this paper is the experimental evidence for parapsychological phenomena review. I'm going to show this nice and big for everyone. Here is the paper right here. And this journal is a peer-reviewed journal. This is a valid, genuine arena of when it comes to the academia. So this is a valid, I would say, classification. So here, I just want to highlight this. The evidence for PSI is comparable to that for established phenomena, psychology, and other disciplines. So I'm going to go to now a quick video clip from Etzel Cardenia. He is the Thorsten Chair in Psychology, Lund University in Sweden, where he directs the Center of Research for Consciousness and Anomalous Psychology. So I'm going to just play a few minutes here, and then we go on.
We're talking about the number of experiments overall that were incorporated into your study, well over 1,000, as I recall.
Also, did you hear that? Over 1,000 experiments confirming PSI. So PSI has apparitions, it has psychokinesis, telekinesis, and this is actually validated through several experiments. And what are these experiments? We have psychokinesis on random number generators, psychokinesis on living systems, ESP in the GANS field, remote viewing, presentiment studies. So what is psychokinesis? In the Greek, it means soul and movement, telekinesis from far off and movement. So this has been established for so long, and it has extensive citation and documentation, experimentation for this. So this was posted in the Washington Post. As a psychiatrist, I diagnose mental illness also helps spot demonic possession. So I'm not going to read the whole article, but what's interesting is this psychologist, he knows he can determine the difference between someone that's mentally ill and someone that is demonically possessed. And he goes into languages. That's several people have that he's diagnosed and he's helped, and he's actually witnessed people speak like 20 different languages at once. And I think that goes beyond the human scope, and it just doesn't happen on a whim. There's no naturalistic explanation, so that is the paranormal. And it's, again, the definition of paranormal means supernatural. So yeah, here it is. People will check this out. I'm not going to go through the whole thing again because I have a limited amount of time. I don't want to waste everyone's time, but there it is. And make sure to move this over. There we go. And now here is another journal, Demonic Possession and Parapsychology. So I'm just showing you the literature that's out there. Survey selected possession cases and lists features commonly present. These include such parapsychological phenomena as levitation and the ability to use unlearned languages. The vicious and violent psychokinetic and ESP manifestations make it doubtful that the phenomenon is a conventional poltergeist or any other general manifestation of psychic ability or due suggestion, although these possible explanations are related to possession. So I want to go back to this. This was presented on TED Talk, Parapsychology.
Fierce poltergeist.
Whoops, I'm going to get him nice and big for everyone to look at. So this is he's a cosmologist, and he's also a PhD psychologist. So he has background. He's one of the most well-known people. I'll get his name after this, but I'll let him play the clip here and everyone to see.
Very good. Fierce poltergeist, and the lady solved it. Well, I instructed her at the telephone, and she wrote me an email and described how she got rid of the poltergeist simply by knowing what I just told you. So can we get...
I think that I can make the fortunate report that the poltergeist has vanished. My first assumption after the telephone conversation was that the house does not like me, and I do not like the house. But since the phenomenon did not disappear, I thought that this cannot be the problem. And besides, this would have been a known problem. When I looked...
Oops.
Right here.
Well, I'm going to... Hold on, it's my bad.
Fierce.
I'm going to get it over here. Whoops.
Very.
How do I get this?
Fierce poltergeist.
Oh, well. But this guy is Raymond... Walter von Lakudu.
Fierce poltergeist, and the lady and, solved it. Well,
a TED Talk, he just shows a woman that has, they have visual evidence of an apparition attacking a lady. So, I mean, there's just so much evidence that we can go to, experimentation. So this isn't like some type of woo science or some type of thing that people make up, like conspiracy theories, like flat earth. It's not even comparable. And now I'm going to go into near-death experiences, evidence for their reality. So this, again, is another peer-reviewed journal. It's MBCI. In near-death experiences report about 17% of those people that nearly die. But see, here's what I like about this this paper here, this journal, is he goes into the line of evidence is where it eliminates naturalistic phenomena being the case. So number one, line of evidence is lucid, organized experiences while unconscious, comatose, clinically dead. Near-death experiences occur at a time when a person is so physically compromised, they are typically unconscious, comatose, or clinically dead. Considering NDEs from a both medical perspective and logically, it should be not possible for the unconscious people to often report highly lucid experiences. And there's one paper people can look at. It was by Jeffrey Long. But here's the major one that I really wanted to focus on is Bruce Grayson. He's been in this field for over 25 years and has thousands of accounts. And he has a thorough debunking of every possible explanation, natural explanation, birth memories, altered blood gases, toxic for hallucinations. So that's a typical that's what skeptics like to say, they're hallucinations, but he goes through and completely obliterates that idea. Neurochemistry, so he goes through that, he goes through neuroanatomy, positive, so we can go to all this stuff. But here's the thing, though, that if you most of these cases of these near-death experiences, they have people that have unaccountable information that from the past, of past relatives, and information that cannot be attained through natural means. So, and then there's blind people that were born. That were born blind at death. I mean, I'm sorry, born blind at birth. So, and then they explain the color of snow. They describe trains outside. They're explaining people and what they look like. And these are blind people. So these, you can't just write it off and hand wave it off and say, oh, it's just a nature of the gaps. And no, there's a point where it does become parapsychology there, or paranormal, which means beyond science or supernatural. But here's the thing, here's another thing I'd like to show, that just even in general positive psychology, there's six things that are virtues. And one of them is transcendence. And I want to show the definition of transcendence here. So here's from the APA Dictionary of Psychology, transcendence. Transcendence is a metaphysics in the study of consciousness, a state of existence, a perception that is not definable in terms of normal understanding or experience. The term may imply a state that goes beyond conventional conceptions of the natural world. I mean, this is just in general psychology. So I think I think that's pretty much all I had to show is we have near-death experiences that show angels, afterlife. We also have demonology and parapsychology. We have, it's just an abundance of citations and journals. So I end my time and I can see to Jim.
Thanks so much. Praise. We will kick it over to Jim Majors. So what I'm going to do is just put in, there you go. Thanks so much, Praise. You already got it before I could. So we're going to kick it over to Jim Majors. Thanks so much, Jim, for being here. The floor is all yours.
All right. Let me get my horn straight, man. All right. Thanks, Praise, for that. I appreciate your opening. And again, thanks for this debate. Let's see. Okay, so when it comes to demons, first we need to establish what we're talking about. I think we all know what Praise is talking about. He's talking about your typical Emily Rose, demonic or spirit possession, foaming at the mouth, convulsing, a clear aversion to religious artifacts, religious trinkets. As far as demons go, do demons exist? In short, no. The long part's a little bit more complicated. So demons exist in the same way that angels exist, or Satan exists, or the fallen angels or the Nephilim exist. And that is, they exist in concept alone. And those concepts are ambiguous and they change over time. For instance, demon, or in the Greek, daimon, daimones, daimonion, did not always have a negative connotation, did not always have a dualistic connotation. In fact, the earliest concepts of a demon were not good, not bad, could be either or, could be a little bit of one and a little bit of the other, but very rarely did you see any demon that was just pure evil or an agent of evil. In fact, in the Old Testament, by and large, God is the source of all things. He's the source of evil. You can see that in Isaiah 45. But in the New Testament, demons are the source of evil. They are co-conspirators with the evil archetype, Satan. They are the source of disease. Now that's always been the case. Demons have always been identified as these things, but not just these things, not just negative things. They were also credited with things like lightning, earthquakes. People like Plato and Socrates thought of demons like that. In fact, it wasn't up until somewhere in Second Temple Judaism, somewhere between the 5th century BCE and the 1st century CE, when we see this rise in Jewish Greek literature, especially Apocrypha, especially these extra canonical books, these books that were seen as later as no-gos. This is when we first start to see this dualistic interpretation of the Greek terms daimon and daimonion, but not exclusively dualistic. In fact, it wasn't until the church fathers got a hold of it and got a hold of some extra biblical literature, most likely some Enochian literature, probably had some Zoroastrian influence, some Persian religion influence as far as like the dualistic nature there. So it's not until like the second or third century that when the church fathers start associating the fallen angels, their spawn, their souls, or the, so to speak, that roamed the earth after they were killed. There were several different interpretations. Demons have evolved a lot up until now. In fact, there's no word for demon in the Hebrew. There are several words, five or six, I believe there's six words that are translated from the Hebrew into daimones or daimonion in the Septuagint. And the closest one, I guess the one that modernly we associate with a demon would probably be the Shedim, or the shades, but they were, I guess the best way to explain it would be like lesser gods or, yeah. And this is about the same time that we see the rise of Satan as an actual entity, as an actual one angel instead of just a general rebellious adversary. And we see Satan getting cast out of heaven with the angels that followed him. And in the Christian mind, those are the demons, usually in most interpretations. So what is the evidence for these demons? Now that we've kind of established what they are, we know that they're these evil little agents of bad, agents of Satan that are that can possess us. They can take over our body. They don't have any form themselves, even though they're often you know, characterized. They're often personified and anthropomorphized as, you know, having horns, wings. I left my wings in the closet. Actually don't have wings, but that'd be cool if I did. So it's usually identified in, like Praise said, in demonic possession or in cases of exorcism. But there's a huge problem with exorcism, a huge problem. It's actually funny that Praise mentioned Richard Gallagher. He's a psychiatrist. He's also called the world's leading expert on demonic possession. He wrote a book called Demonic Foes. It's all about exorcisms and his 25 years as an exorcist. But there's no evidence for these incredible events, for all these things that he's seen. There is no evidence. There's no video. And these are fairly modern, you know, events. But Gallagher has an answer for that. He says that the demons won't submit to lab studies or allow themselves to be easily recorded by video equipment. He says that they want to sow doubt and not confirm their existence. And the church will not compromise the privacy of a person suffering from possession just to provide film to skeptics, end quote. So that, I mean, that's really really convenient. So is demonic possession demonstrable? Well, according to Gallagher, the world's leading expert on demonic possession, no, because the demons are clever and tricky. Many psychologists in his field have spoken out against him. They were deeply concerned about his methodology, his conclusions, his contribution to practices that are potentially harmful to the patient's mental health. And some of the psychologists in his field even go as far to say that his grasp of science is troubling. In fact, there's been many reports out against him. One was done by three clinical psychologists, one a professor. And they say that talking about one particular exorcism, they say that they quote him. They say, quote, "She could tell some people their secret weaknesses, such as undue pride. She knew how individuals she'd never known had died, including my mother and her fatal case of ovarian cancer. Six people later vouched to me that during her exorcisms, they heard her speaking multiple languages, including Latin, completely unfamiliar to her outside her trances." Okay, so apparently she could only speak these languages inside of her trances, and he only knows this because six people later told him that, and because she could tell some people their secret weaknesses, like undue pride, whatever kind of weakness that is, and she knew how his mother died. First of all, you can find out how somebody's mother died online. It's called hot reading. they could have gotten could have used cold reading for some of those things as well. He also assumes that one, that these anecdotes of supposed eyewitnesses who already have a belief in demonic possession are reporting it accurately. He's not seeing this for himself. He's not, he has no verifiable evidence, the same amount of evidence that you and I have. And he's just saying, yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm going to write that down. That sounds good. He also assumes that the patient could already speak these languages while in a trance. But he fails to entertain the possibility that she already knew these languages that she was speaking. Talks about the displays of extraordinary strength, which is not something unheard of for people who are in extreme situations and under the influence of adrenaline. The levitation would be something awesome. That would be something really, really great to note. But Gallagher himself says, quote, "I have not witnessed a levitation myself, but half a dozen people I work with vow that they've seen it in the course of their exorcisms." He is the world's leading expert on demonic possession, and he has not seen in all his 25 years of depossessing, repossessing bodies, depossessing demons, exorcising demons, has never seen levitation. But six people that he's worked with, who I assume aren't the leading expert in demonic possession, have seen it. In many cases of this exorcism, supposed demonic possession, it can be faked. It can be something learned and mimicked in order to fulfill a certain agenda, whatever that may be. Robert Baker, in 1992, in his book *Kitten Memories*, he talks about how there were nuns who used to act possessed. Oh, I'm a unicorn. Shit. There were nuns who used to act possessed, so they would be able to get out their sexual frustrations without being culpable themselves. So they could just blame it on the demonic possession. They could get their rocks off, and then, you know, they could get exercise and then good to go. Because, you know, people can be possessed over and over again, or it might take somebody 62 times to be exercised. How much time do I have left? Okay, if we're about to the end, then can I get one more minute?
Sure.
Okay, and just one more point that I want to touch on is parapsychology. Yes, there are many, many studies in parapsychology, but there's no way to determine a causal mechanism for any of these things, for ESP, for telekinesis, any of that. And the causal mechanisms that are posited are wildly speculated, and the speculation is demonstrable in the sheer lack of agreement amongst the people who are positing these potential causes. There are so many problems. The second law of thermodynamics. There's just so many issues with parapsychology, and it hasn't moved. It hasn't advanced at all in its understanding of "quote unquote" parapsychology or the psi since the late 1800s. It has not moved at all. And with that, I surrender the few seconds that I have. Thanks.
You got it. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Demons don't exist. Yeah.
Thanks so much. And we will kick it into open conversation mode. Praise, are you convinced? Are you ready to just lay it down and move on?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Give it to me, man.
So there's a couple things that I think you misrepresented, and that's parapsychology at the end. And Etzel Cardania, I'm going to just pull up really quick, let you see something. There, it's not only an ongoing thing, it's exploding right now. So that's, I think that's a mischaracterization of the field of PSI. I'm going to share that real quick.
What was the latest discovery or the latest breakthrough that they've had?
With psychokinesis, and I'm going to actually show that as well, the experiments. We have psychokinesis on random number generators, and we can go into that. We can go to each thing here, but through popular books, portrayals. Hold on, that's not, I'm just trying to get to my internet. Oh, well, but it's not connecting right now, but we have five classifications of experimental evidence. And so you can't, we just can't just like, oh no, there's no evidence, but yet we have thousands upon thousands, as I showed in the beginning of my presentation from Etzel, that it's over an abundance amount of experimentation for PSI. And another thing I wanted to address you with is, you said there's no mechanism for the paranormal. Well, that's what you would expect if there is a supernatural dimension. It's not, that's assuming that there are, it is mechanistic, or God is a mechanistic God, or the supernatural realm is mechanistic. So no, I think that is an argument from ignorance.
Well, it doesn't have to be mechanistic. It just has to be causal. There just has to be some sort of causal link that you can establish other than speculation.
Well, see, that's close to me begging the question, though, because are you assuming that there's a material causation? Or are you looking, and what would a supernatural causation?
There has to be a material one. There just has to be a demonstrable one that can be repeated. That's what experimental evidence is for, is so that it can be repeated.
Okay, but here's another thing, too, the growing evidence for demonic possession. This is in Springer. Would you say Springer is a trustable syndication, or you think that's a biased source? Or
No, I've actually read the one that you're talking about.
So there is evidence in this arena of demonology. And so what did you get out of Betty Stafford's
I'll answer that, but I might give away something, so can you mind if I ask you a real quick question?
Sure.
Easy answer for this one. How are demons exorcised?
And through the name of the Lord Jesus Christ.
Is that the only way?
Yes.
Okay. Did you know that in this study it talks about a Chinese Taoist abbot who walked up to the person who was possessed, holding an ivory tabulet, which is essentially like an amulet. It's been around since like Mesopotamian times, which to the Taoist was a symbol of wisdom and authority. It's called a hue. I think it's just hue. Mm-hmm. And prayed in the name of Shangdi, their deity, and he was cured. It also speaks about an Indian Baba, or a Baba is like a Hindu Hindu holy man. He was holding an arti, which is essentially like a little metal tray with it's called like a tray of lights, but it's has a votive candle or a candle on it, and some other elemental representations, fire, water, earth, whatever. And in Hinduism, the demons fear the name of the Lord Hanuman. Hanuman's the son of the wind god Vayu. And guess what? They were cured. So it seems like you travel from culture to culture, and it depends on the person's belief. And oftentimes when the person is exorcised, it's not a cure. And one has to, one has to wonder, okay, well, what is it? Do I need to resort to conventional medicine and psychiatry first? Well, of course, that's a given.
Yeah.
But sometimes medication doesn't work, and for schizophrenia patients, their medicine works for them. I believe only 20% or 30% of people who have schizophrenia. There are some people for whom we cannot help, we cannot cure with medicine. We cannot get it down to a maintainable level.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is that exorcism has been shown to do nothing. But with all of the supposed claims of demon possession, one, there is still so, there's zero evidence. There's some hoax videos online.
Yeah,
there are some.
I just want to respond to each claim because I don't want to like
sure,
try
sure,
to.
Sure.
Yeah. So number one, so I think
the Chinese abbot and the Hindu Baba.
Yeah. I think Jesus made it clear. Satan doesn't cast out Satan. And you're talking about healings. I wouldn't call that a demonic exorcism. Exorcism is getting rid of expulsion of a demon from a person. And if you look at the Bible,
they had demons.
No, what I'm saying though, but you said healed. Does that mean like a physical healing or what does that mean?
Spiritual healing. That's essentially what an exorcism is it not?
Well, I mean, so
when Jesus exorcised demons, he was said to have healed them.
Yeah, but I would say that the word there, heal, is a buzzword. I think we have to unpack that a little bit.
Well, so, yeah, I mean, it's an ambiguous term, but it is accurate. They had an affliction, which was the demonic possession, and it was cured.
Okay. So I think the biblical perspective of an exorcism is a little bit different because Jesus says that when a spirit is exorcised, that seven others or seven times those are looking forward to come back into that without the gospel preaching to them,
right? Without being replaced by God,
right? So you have to fill them with some type of spiritual gospel or some type of principle, and, you know, some type of teaching or something. So
and that belief is common in Islam, in Buddhism, in Hinduism, in Judaism, where the demons do have an opportunity to come back. That's why, like in Jewish mythology, in Second Temple Greek Jewish literature, you have like this idea of banishing a demon to Tartarus, like down to the underworld where they come from. But if you leave yourself open to it, it's not always seven, you know, but it is the theme of a demon being able to re-enter you is very common. And I think that's just a practical piece of theology to explain why people aren't healed by these demons. I mean, like you have to admit, like the best potential cases of demonic possession that we know of, with the most, what you could say, quote unquote, evidence for, it takes months, sometimes years. People die from it. Annalise Michelle, a little German girl, she died weighing 68 pounds at 20 something years old, and with her knees broken because she was being forced to kneel so many times for the exorcism. I think she was exorcised some 60 something times.
Now, was this a Catholic organization, or do you know what organization this is? You said a girl, Lisa, I believe.
Her name is Annalise Michelle.
Yeah.
Let me make sure I got that right.
Want to let you know, folks, while Jim is looking that up, we, if you have not heard, if you have been living in a cave on Mars with your fingers in your ears, we at Modern Day Debate have invaded the podcast world. So we're very excited about that. You can find us on all of your favorite podcasts, including Google Podcasts and the iTunes Store. So very excited about that. Check us out and rate us. That helps a lot. So we'll kick it back over to James Majors.
It's Jim, but thanks, James. Yeah, her name was Anna Elizabeth. She went by Annalise Michel. She was a German girl. She died in 1976 at the age of 23. The cause of death was determined to be malnutrition, because after the 67 exorcisms, at some point she had stopped eating. She was malnourished, dehydrated. She weighed much less than she should have. Like I said, she had broken knees from genuflecting for the exorcism rites, and her parents were actually found guilty of negligent homicide.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that's the issue. Like, you have to have spiritual discernment. I mean, Richard Gallagher, you're bringing up him. I think he does have very valid spiritual discernment. So this is where we have to know the difference between someone who is possessed and someone who's not, someone that is going sick. And the Bible makes it clear there is a distinction there between someone who is sick and possessed. So I think this is also, the Bible makes it clear that only a few people have this spiritual discernment or ability. Like, it has to be a gift. And even the apostles messed up a couple times with their when they're trying to exorcise demons. So it should be much more treaded cautiously. And unfortunately, people don't do that. And so I would say that account really is just an account of negligence on religious people. That doesn't mean that they don't exist, though. It just means that there's negligent people out there.
Sure. But these negligent people are what account for so much so much child abuse being connected with this. The Department of Education in the United Kingdom saw an 11% rise between 2017 and 2018. There were some 1,800 abuse cases that were linked to demonic possession just in England. It was like 1,400 or 1,500 in 2016. So it's on the rise, and it's because, you know, there is no discernment. First of all, if you want to say that there needs to be spiritual discernment, that's fine. But there needs to be first a rational, natural discernment, first a scientific discernment. Dissociative identity disorder, epilepsy, schizophrenia, Tourette syndrome. There are so many explanations for these things, and it's demonstrable by the incredibly small number that the church actually exercises in comparison to the request to be exercised. It's so astronomically small. In fact, it's so embarrassing. I'd wager it's embarrassing to them, is the reason that they don't even list it. They don't publicize any of their exorcisms until years and years later, and then still with very spurious evidence.
So let me bring a couple of points up to you. So I agree with Richard Gallagher that these demons are not going to try to advance the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of light. And they are going to try to do seeds of doubt. Why would they manifest themselves in front of the world for everyone to see? Do you know what that would cause? It would cause people to leave their doubt and stay in skepticism and to atheism. And
why would they expose themselves to a priest that can exorcise them?
Because that's their realm where they can operate, where they can at least not be scrutinized into a way to be exposed into.
It's because they're compelled to, right? Through holy water or Latin chants or whatever. Yeah, right?
That's just religious shenanigans to me. The Bible is drastically different. There's nothing about holy water. It's always about faith, mm-hmm. and it's a high level of faith too. Where Jesus.
But do demons always present themselves?
No, they won't. And they will not do that. And
so why do they present themselves to somebody who can exorcise them?
Because I think there's a dynamic there with Jesus Christ. I think that is the, I would say that's the underpinning of why there is exorcism, because of Jesus Christ. They recognize his authority, just like the book of Acts. And they said, we know Paul, we know you, but who were they? There's this another guy there that was some, is like some idiot there, like was trying to play. He wanted to be, I think, buried in the ground. He thought he was going to resurrect or something, and like some idiotic belief. And that's the problem. You have idiotic beliefs out there mixing with the spiritual realm. And but see, you know, parapsychology, I mean, people just try to keep, you know, dismissing it, but it's not going to go away, because we have several sciences out there that go into that realm.
And like, that's what, like what? Like I mean, like what advances have been made in parapsychology?
We have quantum mechanics. I think the observer effect, we have different things.
The quantum mechanics absolutely fails parapsychology. Once you, it just shows a misunderstanding of quantum mechanics. They propose this universe model, the block model, where time is simultaneous, where all time at one time is existing at one time, past, present, future. It's all one big mashup. It just shows a complete misunderstanding of the second law of thermodynamics, of the law of relativity, of causality, of inverse square law.
But yeah, I would say the thermodynamics actually support our point, because it shows that there was a definite beginning time. It shows that there is, you know, a beginning, and then there has to be a beginner that began this reality. And I would say also quantum mechanics. I mean, I can show you like 25 different things in there that show that reality is not real. It's a fabrication. It's a simulation, if you want to call it a simulation. So thermodynamics.
But you understand that the energy cannot be created or destroyed. So in something like precognition, in this block model universe that they propose, that violates the thermodynamic principle, because the future cannot affect the past without there being some energy created or destroyed.
That's assuming there is a future, and I would say that time is relative.
Now.
That could just be present. It's just another present time moment. See, we're going to argue
in the block model, it's all in the same thing, but that doesn't change the fact that we have our perception of that, and whatever precognition that we're using, whatever parapsychological attribute we're employing, telepathy, whatever, it requires acting within our framework, right?
Well, no, that's assuming that it's material, though. What if we are in a mental, what if we're in an idealistic type of reality?
Like what?
So idealism is meant, it's fundamentally mental. We live in a mental reality or dimension, if you want to call it that.
Okay, but I don't see how that gets you away from, or gets you to be allowed to violate the law of thermodynamics.
Well, because it's mental causation. Well, so I would say thermodynamics is fluid. It could change with the mind. So the mind is the most fundamental force in reality. And I can show you so many different citations. Parapsychology confirms this.
In our perception of reality, yeah.
Yeah, our perception of reality.
Right. So that's just neuroscience. That's not parapsychology.
No. It goes into quantum mechanics too, because when we go down to subatomic particles, that they don't exist without mental observation.
Right.
And so, if that is fundamental, then the mind is reality.
Okay, but what about causality?
So causality would just be something that would be pertinent to us, not necessarily the supernatural realm. So in this...
No, it would be pertinent because effects need to have causes necessarily, right?
Well, with God, no.
And with the universe?
Well, with the universe...
Are you saying that the universe is not contingent?
I would say it's emergent. I wouldn't say that it was. I wouldn't say that there was a ex nihilo event or something like that.
I'm not talking about ex nihilo. I'm just simply talking about a causal chain, a causal event.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we can go the principle of sufficient reason. I think that would secure that belief or hypothesis. Yeah.
Okay, so there should be some sort of causal link for what we observe in a demonic possession, right?
Not necessarily. Maybe just with the background. I would say that things with the background, the universe, and things that are we perceive as physical material are just a fabrication. They don't really exist.
I think you're breaking up on me. I don't know if it's my connection or yours.
I think it's my connection.
Yeah, hello.
Really, it's like slower
or whatever.
Is it me, James, or is it Jim?
I think it's more Jim's connection. I hear praise pretty clearly, but you've been going on those websites I told you not to go on, Jim. It's a little bit hard to hear you. So, let's see. Well, I want to remind you, folks, it looks like we might... You might.
No, yeah. I was having a good convo, man. I was getting right into a good one.
Wait, he might just be standing still. Jim? Oh, I think he's frozen. Okay, so want to let you know, folks. I'm sure he'll be back in just a second. I hope. Sometimes I think he's got storms where he is. Whether or not that's true tonight, I don't know. It is Halloween. Spooky. Hopefully he's okay. But want to let you know we're confident he'll be right back. And also want to let you know, folks, as always. Oh, I think we're getting him back.
Yeah.
Can you hear us, Jim?
Yeah, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, well, you're cool. Cracking up a little bit, but... Okay. Yeah, so we were talking about the second law of thermodynamics. We're going to get back into that. So I guess my point is that it's still mental causation. So we can have a series or a chain of mental observers, and I think that fits fine with what you were bringing up. Can Jim hear me?
Jim, can you hear us? Very spooky.
yeah. Hey, I'm joining in on my phone.
Okay. And we are going to want to give you a reminder, folks. We're going to go to Q&A in maybe about 5 minutes here. So do want to let you know if you have a question, fire it into the live chat. At this point, we've got a good amount of questions, so there's no guarantee that we'll get through all of them. So heads up. Sorry about that if we don't get to read your question. But, we will go into the Q&A about 5 minutes. And Jim, can you hear us now?
Is Jim in the house?
Want to let you know, folks, though, you'll see at the bottom right of your screen, we are very excited as this Friday, this may be the biggest, baddest flat earth debate you have ever seen in your life. We know how much you love flat earth debates, folks. I don't know. You guys, a lot of you seem to love them. But we are excited as this one will for sure be an epic one. As anytime you have Nathan Thompson and Aaron together, it's going to be nuts. Believe me.
Oh, so,
We're very excited. That should be a lot of fun. Nathan Thompson is in the chat right now, folks. So if you want to say hi, harass him, you know, just kidding though. If you want to do us a favor, I totally cool if you want to basically, if you want to attack people's arguments, feel free. We encourage you. No problemo. We do want to ask that you'd be your regular friendly selves though. And so we do want to ask you that you not harass people, even if it's Nathan Thompson's.
So, yo, what's up, Nathan? What's going on, buddy?
That's right. Praise has debated Nathan in the past. That was an exciting one.
I got wrecked.
And we are very excited about that. Also, though, folks, if you have not seen this, I think in terms of debates that we've had, you know, we usually put out the event. I mean, sometimes it's a couple hours before, like tonight, but we try to put out the event. If it's going to be a big event, we try to put the page up early. And I don't know if we have ever gotten as many likes on an event before it started as the one that is currently on the bottom right of your screen saying Marxist versus capitalist. Namely, this is going to be Dr. Wolf, who you see on the left, taking on Dr. Friedman. This is honestly going to be, so if you don't know who these gentlemen are, Dr. Wolf has been on, I think, like Fox News, CNN, so big time economist that's been interviewed, I mean, at really high levels. And David Friedman, brilliant, absolutely brilliant as well. And so, as a side note, too, by the way, David Friedman, the son of Milton Friedman, so the famous libertarian economist. So, that is going to be, honestly, unbelievable. That's this Thursday. So we have, this week is honestly going to be, as I think Tioga says, off the hook. It is going to be so great, you guys. I am dead serious. I'm so excited for it. And so seriously, it is really cool. Want to let you know about that, and we hope you make it. And so that should be a lot of fun. So let's see. That'll be Thursday, if I remember right. It's in the afternoon. So it's not actually during the middle of basically it's not during the evening as we usually do. So if you're from Europe and some other parts of the world, you will still be hopefully plausibly awake at that time. And so that should be something, folks. We are honestly so excited. And so Polska Bear, thanks so much for your kind words. Appreciate that. Nathan Thompson says, hashtag flat gang. I'm a little bit worried. Jim, where are you? We might go to the questions for a bit, just because I would guess a number of them are going to be for Praise, and those we can wait until Jim gets back. Let me just check really quick. Oh.
There he is.
So we are thrilled to have you back, Jim. Thanks so much, buddy.
Two gems. Oh no.
Let's see. What we will do is
okay.
Thanks so much. I'll let Sorry you guys that. Continue.
It's all good.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah. Actually, you're fairly right, clear now. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So just to go back to like my opening statement, just so we can establish something, like, I don't want to go into this like with like as like a black swan fallacy. Say, well, because I've never seen demons, that means that they don't exist or whatever. I'm willing to grant that. Yeah, sure. There's possible. There's these parapsychological phenomenon that just happen to be similar to actual psychological disorders. When you combine the fact that this dualistic notion of demons and the misuse of them and the lack of them in the Old Testament and the development of them in the New Testament from like Enochian literature and this Second Temple Hellenized Jewish literature, I mean, it leads me more and the fact that within Hinduism, and I'm a unicorn again. That within Hinduism and within Judaism and within Taoism, you know, you have these, all of these different ceremonies, these different exorcism rituals that are done, and they all lead to the same conclusion, about the same success rate. In fact, in Hinduism, the exorcism rate for their rituals, they say is almost 100%. That's completely unverifiable. But the fact of the matter is that people believe, you know, whether or not it is the case, they believe that it causes the healing. It causes a cessation of the symptoms, the maladies. I tend to believe it's mostly for attention or to promote some sort of a personal agenda. And more times than not, an actual personality disorder or an actual mental illness. Many clinical psychologists, like I said, that they take issue with Gallagher and his methodology, because he does use spiritual discernment, but the problem is that he uses it first. Even the Catholic Church doesn't do that. They had to update their exorcism rites, their procedure manual, essentially. It's been the same for 400 years, but they've had to update it because they have acknowledged the prevalence and the understanding that we have in our modern world. Like, demons used to be responsible for things like tummy aches, swimmer's ear, for rotten teeth, for stuttering, for all different kinds of things that we understand now. So it's essentially a demons of the gap fallacy. The demons used to be this big. They used to explain everything that we couldn't explain, anything that we didn't have an explanation for. It was a demon of some sort, a daimon or a lesser deity. It's not quite a god, but it's greater than man. It's somewhere in between. It's those ethereal beings that just float amongst us. And that's kind of along the same lines that people like, like Plato and Socrates and, even up all the way up until like, Origen and Tertullian, the thought of it. In fact, Socrates thought everybody had a demon or a daimon, but it was our self, like our inner self, our conscious, Socrates, I believe he said something like, it's that little voice that whispers behind my ear and helps me decide what to do. So, I mean, it's been interpreted so many different ways. So for you to assert that demons are real, but that they are agents of Satan, who is also a Second Temple construction, it's not found in the Old Testament, not as a being anyways, not until you use extra biblical literature can you associate the serpent in Genesis or the Hashatan or whatever. So out of all the concepts of demons around the world, out of all of the evidences, quote unquote, for exorcism and all these other cultures, we're still expected to believe that the Christian dualistic interpretation of a demon as evil agents of Satan that can only be cast out in Jesus's name and Hindu gods' names and Taoist gods' names, and it's et cetera, et cetera, Islam. It just gets harder and harder to believe. It's like saying, I want you to believe in unicorns, but you have to believe in my unicorn. It's shaggy. It's got green eyes and it's got three horns. We still call it a unicorn because the horns are really grouped together. So from far away, it looks like one horn, but not any of the others. So unicorns do exist, but just my interpretation.
Can I have just a quick conclusion there, James?
Of course.
Oh, sweet. So there's a couple of things I want a conclusion tonight. I love talking with Jim. He's a great interlocutor, but with all due respect, okay. James or Jim, he didn't respond to my peer review literature that I showed. It was just a whole load that I brought up.
I responded to both of them.
Well, I had the parapsychology meta-analyses, and that means that there's an abundance of analysis, analytical. Sorry, go ahead.
But you didn't give me any examples. All you said was that there were over 1,000 experiments that were done. I didn't get any specifics.
Well,
I did
parapsychology
as a pseudoscience.
I gave you 5 of them, and I outlined each one. I was trying to click on one, but my link wasn't going there. But so we can rewind and look at that.
Can you give me an example and refresh it, or was it in the video?
It's in the video, but hold on, I'll pull it up. Give me 1 second here.
Okay, well, what do you think is the best one, so we don't have to go through all of them?
Well, psychokinesis, I think that's a really good one. Yeah.
Okay. Well, what, and just for the audience and for me, just so I understand what you're trying to convey. What is that?
So psychokinesis is the ability to transcend what you would call natural reality, which I would probably have a different definition of that, or a different understanding of that. So it's by definition, it transcends. It's in what they call supernatural. And they've shown this on different experiments, hundreds or almost thousands. And so, and I think
what kind of experiments are we talking? Like, are they used, like repeated experiments, or?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just going to pull it up because I actually exited out. So I saw the debate. Hold on. Here we go. I'm pulling up right now. Or hopefully.
So, but psychokinesis, again, there's no way to establish any causal mechanism, right?
Well, we could say mental causation. I think that fits well along with idealism and quantum mechanics. I would say, yeah, I would say, sure.
Right, but in order to repeat the experiment, it would have to be something that is observable and
well, reported. It has to
be an actual event that we can observe.
Well, it is. It's there's plenty of experimental, repeatable evidences we have. And I outlined them, still trying to, I think my internet's going slow for some reason. Here we go. So PK, so psychokinesis on random number generators, psychokinesis on living systems, ESP in the GANS field, remote viewing, presentiment studies. So which one do you want me to go into? And I'll go, there's a whole.
You said psychokinesis was the best that you believed?
Yeah.
Okay, that's like telekinesis, right? Same thing?
It's in that same realm, yeah.
Okay. All right, let's go with that.
All right. My thing's getting kind of slow right now. I apologize for that, but...
That's fine. But you know, like the things like telekinesis, like they're seen as pseudoscience largely in the in relative fields, right? Or relevant fields.
Right. And we have professionals that were in those other fields, and they say those are mischaracterizations of science. So we have people like Edsel Cardania, and he goes into extensive, he has a whole paper on this, how it is valid science, it's repeatable. I put the paper up. It's called
just one study like that shows it being like repeated with a good control.
Well, Edsel Cardania and the one I outlined, it's a meta-analysis, and it has it's a whole load of stuff you can check out. And so that is valid. It's valid science. Yeah.
What kind of control are we talking about though?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I haven't really studied that. So maybe that's something I would need to get into more deeper. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, is that, I think that's something that's like paramount when we're talking about like studies of any kind, or when we're trying to assess the actuality of this, this telekinetic ability. Because I mean, there's like Chris Angel, you know, hovers, people back in the old days used to read fortunes, have a crystal ball, and they would make the table float. You know, that magic tricks exist, but we can determine that those are magic tricks because we can establish a causal link. We can see what causes this, what causes that. And it's because investigative studies are done into it to determine what the cause is, whether out of genuine curiosity or whether out of the desire to debunk them and expose them or what have you. But in order to say that it is truly telekinesis or psychokinesis, I mean, we have to establish that that is what's going on and not some magic trick or not some mentalism trick. Or we'd see somebody just, you know, going to Vegas and hitting the roulette wheel and just staying there.
Yeah. So do you see this? Is it up there showing?
Yes.
So here's observation of psychokinetic effect under highly controlled conditions by Helmut Schmidt. This is a journal. So you can see the random here. Here's the, you said the control conditions. Well, here's even a visual of it. And they go through. So it's formalab.ch. And I mean, I don't know how to make it blow it up, but, here's the paper, though. Observation of a psychokinetic effect under highly controlled conditions. So anyone can look this up. It's also in the Journal of Parapsychology in 1993. So this has been out in a while. And this is legitimate science. I don't see how you could not deem this not legitimate science.
I mean, I'm seeing stuff in the 70s and 80s, but I, of course, I can't read it scrolling. But what is the... what is the conclusion of the experiment? I'm willing to grant that the methodology and everything is up to snuff. What is the conclusion?
So the conclusion is that we have experimental data for psychokinesis or parapsychological phenomena.
And has this been repeated?
Yes, this is repeatable. We have. Again, thousands of experiments showing this.
Do we have anything since the 80s?
Yeah. And if like for some reason the site's down, but it goes through the most recent ones we have during the most presentment studies. So this is on the Parapsychological Association. People can check it out right now. I think it's down though. So I wanted to go there, but unfortunately we couldn't, but I just want to address one quick real something you mentioned about people getting healed and with these, demonic possessions. That's not necessarily the case. Healings don't go with it. It's just superhuman powers. And we have documented evidence this from so many police organizations at when it's a full moon out, when people are getting caught doing criminal activity, especially when they are influenced with drugs, they have superhuman ability and it goes beyond just adrenaline. And I highly recommend to check
sure.
that
well,
out.
I mean, you're talking about drugs. I mean, it's not just adrenaline. I mean, you're introducing a chemical into your body, which can have adverse reactions.
Yeah, but there's a point, though, when you have five or six cops on you for one man. And
yeah, like PCP, like it's well known in, especially in drug PCP, seemingly superhuman strength, but really what it amounts to is a a heightened, not only a heightened adrenaline release, but also a, you know, they're high off their balls. They're resisting, they're running away. Who knows what they're thinking that they're, that's happening to them. They might think that they're being drugged to hell by demons. Who knows?
Right. Yeah, well, I think that to me is just maybe shifting the goalposts, because if that was true, then the world's strongest men would be doing drugs to get the highest weight, and they don't do that stuff.
That's not true. I mean, it gives the illusion of superhuman strength because of their resistance, because of their they don't give up. I mean, somebody who is just struggling.
I think that's a gross distortion. No, there's actual recorded cases where they took six cops to with their brute strength to keep down someone that was on with some type of PCP, whatever drug. And they're saying there's just no physical possibility of that. We're talking over 2,000 pounds of strength. Like bench pressing that much of strength, that just goes beyond limits of physical normality. So,
and to go along with like the increased strength, I wouldn't call it superhuman strength, because you're not talking about anybody. You don't have any stories about people flipping cars or like throwing buses or anything like that. It's always struggling against cops. It's common with the drug PCP. I mean, it's so common that whenever something like that happens, they can pinpoint it. So, I mean, unless you're saying that PCP is the demon, then all you're doing is just like, it's just transferring.
No, they can have access to the demonic realm. And I'm saying that, yeah, drugs is a gateway to the demonic realm. And there's just so, you got to have a little bit of spiritual. It's hard to talk to materialists because
I've tripped balls. I've taken acid. I've taken shrooms. I've entered what I would consider the spirit realm, where I am no longer in my shoes, so to speak. Was I possessed then?
Could have, yeah. And see, that's the problem. I don't even know if people even realize they are when they.
Okay, so I'm willing to bet that we could have. How do you go about establishing whether or not I was?
That's really not established. Only I can only refer to the biblical literature, and that means like cutting yourself and things like that.
You mean depression?
No, I wouldn't say depression. I'm saying it's like a mania. It goes beyond mania.
The biblical account refers to an inconsolable man sitting down who is cutting himself with a stone, right?
I don't know if that indicates some type of depression, though. I think that's...
Sure it does. Of course it does. If not an indicator, it's certainly enough of an indicator that you would explore that as your first option. Or should.
Yeah, I mean, it could reference that, but I don't know if it actually is, though.
So instead of using spiritual discernment with my LSD experience, for example, I can just say, well, whenever I came down off of LSD, I was no longer in the spirit realm. Therefore, it probably wasn't demonic possession.
Yeah, but I see. I don't know. I can't really establish because I wasn't there. Or no professional was there. So it's hard to give some type of diagnosis on that. I don't know. It could have.
Well, I can promise you, if I was tripping balls, I wouldn't be able to operate the computer.
Yeah, but another thing is there's a difference between supernatural and superhuman, too. I think that was maybe you were mischaracterizing that a little bit, but that's fine. I mean, so when I say superhuman strength, like if it takes 6-7 men to hold you down, I mean, that goes beyond the normal range of human strength.
It does go beyond the normal range, because normally we aren't we don't have our pain receptors blocked. We don't have this increase in serotonin and dopamine and norepinephrine and epinephrine and adrenaline coursing through our body. Those are not normal doses for our body. Those are abnormal, extra normal doses, of course.
But you have to account that the other people that are trying to hold him down also had their own adrenaline. So it wasn't like they were just...
Well, sure, but they're not on PCP.
Yeah, but it's just, I'm just saying, like, to me, like, you're trying to shift the goalposts a little bit there, maybe, but because when you have six men holding down a fugitive or whatever, and they still can't even do it, it's almost a futile task at that point. Then you have to start questioning things. I'm just saying, like, I don't, maybe, okay, we can put in the realm.
We question our police force, stop weaponizing them, and start making them work out.
Yeah, maybe.
We'll go.
I'll leave it there.
This might be a good opportunity to jump into the Q&A. I want to say thanks so much for your questions, folks. Thanks so much to our speakers, and we are going to grill them now with your questions. So we appreciate all of these. First up, appreciate your question.
As long as you flip me when I'm done.
This one comes from Club, as he likes to be called. Caleb, thanks for your question. He says, congratulations on the win, Praise.
Looks like
he's trolling you good, Jim. All right, next up. Oh, we got a lot of trolls. But God's Servant, thanks for your question, said, good show as always, Modern Day Debate. The real question, who cares about slime? Praise God instead. Thanks. Appreciate. Glad you enjoyed tonight's show. I couldn't agree more. It's been an interesting one. Meow, meow, meow. Thank you for your question, said. Jim's giving a bad, in all caps, name to Psy, a.k.a. PSI. Research by Cardina, Broad, Storm, etc. Psy
Cardinia,
effects
I have.
Are established beyond doubt by experiments, but demons are not. Anomalous information acquisition is not demonic. Stop.
What? No.
No, it's not for you, Praise. They're, well, actually, no, it is kind of for you, too. You're right.
So, I honestly don't know. I'm just going to say pass, whatever it is.
But so they're saying, hey, Praise, this, if people have some sort of clairvoyance, like if they're able to know something that in natural methods, you could say they wouldn't be able to know, they're saying it doesn't mean it's demonic, Praise. What's your response?
No, I never said that. No. So my argument is that if the paranormal is demonstrable, then that would also validate that the demonology, that would justify it, or whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
You got it. And thanks for your question. This one comes from Meow 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 is back saying, follow up on my super chat. I meant Praise, not Jim. Oh, that's embarrassing. Okay, I didn't know that. Said, P.S. I may ask to come on to debate. Psy believers and doubters alike get so much wrong in terms of the literature and unjustified inferences. Gotcha. Thanks for that.
Yeah, I don't take any claim to knowing anything about parapsychology. I am a 1 hour layman in that. So
yeah. So Jim, if you do me a favor sometime, look up Dean Radin with parapsychology. You might be surprised.
You got
it. I read him. I read Cardania. And I read what is this other one? Oh, that's Edsel Cardenia. I already read that one.
Gotcha.
Alcock and Child and Bim. Those are the ones I read.
Gotcha. Thanks so much. And thanks for your question. By the way, thanks. Someone put a poll up on Twitter asking whether or not you believe in demons. I think that was you, Robert. It's hard for me to remember already. But I retweeted it, so that's a good idea. Folks, if you ever want to have a poll about one of the topics of our debates, feel free to, because sometimes it's just hard for me. I'm rough. I'm kind of running ragged with very little time. And so if you do make a poll, feel free to tag us, just at us at Modern Day Debate, and we will retweet that as we get a kick out of those. Gurmania, thanks for your question, said, question for praise. Why did God make demons? If they're fallen angels, why did God make angels that he knew would rebel? Why give them free will if he could have made them with love and knowledge of his goodness?
Well, they see, yeah, that is, he did give them knowledge of his goodness. It's called the conscience, Romans 2:14-15. He wrote his moral law in our hearts. So yes, we have knowledge of his goodness, and yeah, free will is the, I call the, that would be your explanation for that. Yeah.
Gotcha. Thanks. And by the way, is daylight savings tonight?
Tomorrow? No, it's trick or treat. I think.
I can't remember. Let me know, chat. Thanks for your question. Havin Gerleman. Appreciate it. This says, I think this is Gavin. This is Gavin Herleman's alter ego. So, says, question for Jim Majors: if the devil can quote scripture, how can we know for sure he didn't write it? Sir.
What leads you to believe that the devil can quote scripture?
Gotcha. I suspect that was a troll question. I think they're
probably like the tempting of Jesus in the wilderness. I'm guessing they're referring to.
Well, yeah, I think that's probably what they're referring to, although I think they're also not asking it sincerely. I think it's meant to be a Poe, P-O-E question. They say, question for praise, according to the Bible, when did God create demons, and what plan for them do you think he had?
So in the beginning, so I have a different perspective than the young earth creationist view. I have what they call the gap theorist view, and I do believe that we all pre-existed in a past, or it was a past earth age or world age, if you want to call it that. In, if you read Proverbs 8:30, and I think it's Job 38:7, that we all lived in harmony with God. We all loved God. And then Satan was, he was elevated to a higher rank in front of the angel, the kingdom there. So there was some type of rebellion. And at that rebellion, Revelation 12:4, that they became demons at that point. So there's, all of us are children of God. We call them, the best way to explain it is angels, but you can call them superhuman entity or supernatural entities, whatever. But yeah.
Gotcha. And let's see. Albert Bitcoin is allegedly a bot, according to Andrew Handelsman. I think Albert is. That does look a little bit like what a bot would say. Maybe Albert, if you're the real deal, you better let us know, because you look exactly like a bot. So thanks for your question. This one comes in from, you guessed it, Nathan Thompson. He says, demons are real. They reside inside of globe zombies. Oh my goodness. Jim and Praise, are you guys going to take that? Last I checked, you guys both believe that the earth is a ball.
Yeah, but the demon realm is flat. But the demon realm is flat.
There you go.
Gotcha. Well, thanks for that. And this, we do have other questions. Let me pull these up right here. Thanks so much for Empedocles, let me know if I mispronounced that, says, for praise, neuroscience and psychology can explain all the quote-unquote evidence for demons and possession. Why do you still believe?
I would say, yeah, but it has nothing to do with materialism. I think that neuroscience, I actually have a debate in the making with Leo Phyllis on this. Is the mind immaterial or physical? I have so much good evidence that it is immaterial. So thank you for making my point. Yeah, it is evidence for the demonics.
Gotcha. And meow, meow, meow. Thanks for your other question. Said Jim, your skepticism of demons is clouding judgments on psi research. Read Cardina 2018. For starters, it's all in caps. They say I lack.
Pronounce Cardania, James.
Thank you. Cardania. Cardania? News.
Yeah,
to
Cardania. Cardania. Let's get the little over the end.
Cardania. Cardania. They said I lack.
Cardania.
There you go. I don't see an I here.
No, there's not. It's a Hispanically implied I.
I see. Gotcha. The tilde. Okay. They say, for starters, I lack space to explain the data, but we can know if before how psi occurs.
Okay, well, I just want to say that even if we can establish that Psy does occur, I can concede that right now. In fact, I will concede that right now because I honestly don't freaking know. I haven't done enough research into it. But drawing the line between Psy is probable or possible or even does exist or is actual, drawing the line to demons exist, there's nothing that can connect that. There's just empty open space with no justification.
Gotcha. And thanks so much. Appreciate your question from, let's see.
These Michael, horns suck.
Michael Dresden, I will humor you despite your typical trollish nature, says, for Jim, you keep bringing up the potential for abuse, but are the negative consequences of an idea evidence that it isn't true?
No, it is just evidence that that other possibilities need to be ruled out before, quote unquote, spiritually discerning whether it is or is not demonic possession. In fact, even the Catholics concede it. They revised their rites of exorcism in 1999 to modernize their rituals, and part of their exorcism is first establishing beyond a shadow of a doubt that it is not a mental affliction. In fact, the priest is supposed to have an accompaniment of psychologists, psychiatrists, of people who actually know what they're looking at.
Gotcha.
Can I briefly disrespond to Jim's statement?
I need to do it, but just because we do want to get through as many questions as possible, I hope you forgive me for that. We do have another one. This one comes in from Samuel Lil Hahome. Let me know if I mispronounced it, friend. They said,
you know you did.
Modern day debate, is not your average court case method functional for determining whether or not there is any natural phenomenon for the things the quote-unquote beings say or do via eyewitness and cross-examination, etc.? I think there may be
nice.
Earlier question they gave, it made me think that, like, court cases, they were trying to argue, like, can't court cases a verdict in it count for evidence? I think that's something to what they're doing now.
Are they saying that I'm not allowed to ask for evidence?
Let's see.
It's all right. We can go on.
I'm not fully sure what it means, to be honest. Meow, meow, meow. Thanks for your question again. Said, by the way, you should pronounce Psy as Psy. Okay, great. Thanks. Next up, let's see. Carnivorous Ape. Got everybody correcting my pronunciation. So Carnivorous Ape says, can you ask praise why only religious people seem to get possessed by demons?
Well, I think that's a good point. Maybe a lot of people don't realize they're possessed and they like it. And maybe that's another whole nother realm to go, or a whole nother path to go down to. But it's usually the people that have spiritual discernment or are religious people that know God, they know light and darkness, and there's something wrong, and they seek to get a change. So maybe that's a good explanation for that.
Gotcha.
You wouldn't think they'd be able to under the influence of a demon.
Yeah, well, I mean, some people like it. Like, some people like drugs. So if it drugs in, you know, possession of the same.
I mean, seeking help.
Oh, okay.
Seeking help under the influence of a demon.
I got to give praise the last word here, then I got to go to the next question.
Yep, sorry, James.
No problem.
Yeah, so I think, when it comes to supernatural phenomenon, that most people don't understand it, and that's unfortunate.
Gotcha. Meow, meow, meow. Thanks for your super chat. Just came in, said, I've been studying Psy literature since 2005. ESP is like a normal part of human and non-human animal life.
Yep.
Jim is right that Psy doesn't imply supernatural.
Boom.
Praise.
That's not congruent with what the peers in the what they're saying within their amongst their peers in that classification of science. So I would say that's not necessarily consistent with what he claims.
Well, there's no consistency in parapsychology.
Next up, Ellie Tamburini, thanks for your question. says to Jim Majors, do you consider beyond the data? Like, if you have no experience, if you have not experienced it, maybe it's beyond the scope.
If you're asking, do I speculate? I try not to.
Gotcha. Next, thanks for your question from Sahi Luke.
Oh, yeah.
For a number of days, he said, James, you don't read my questions. What's going on? We do. It's just that sometimes they come in at the last minute. And I want to let you know, folks, if we ever, I hate doing that to you, though, because I know that sometimes we do miss questions. And so forgive me, folks. We're trying our best. Sahi Luke, thanks for your question, said, what is your main argument against Praise's case that included peer-reviewed supporting evidence? And then in parentheses, they said exorcism in general, different definitions of demon, quote-unquote, is irrelevant.
No, it's absolutely not irrelevant because the different classifications and the different descriptions of demons, it changes across the culture. Some of them anthropomorphize them. Some of them keep them as pneuma, just as these spirits. Some of them classify them as just lesser deities. The Hebrew Bible, the closest thing to demons is foreign gods or idols, the gods of the Moabites, the Ammonites, Moshek. There's the only consistency there is after the established dualism and negative connotation of demons in the second to third century CE. This is not some ancient held belief. It's a borrowing and a redacting of a previously owned concept.
Gotcha. And Karag Nightwolf, thanks for your question. Longtime viewer of Modern Day Debate says, do demons make anyone do anything impressive, such as fly or breathe fire and not just beat up cops?
I actually read a story about a demon possession. Somebody was possessed by four demons and he masturbated furiously for 4 days straight.
Praise.
That's an admirable thing there. No, I'm just kidding.
Pretty amazing. That's some stamina.
That's pretty amazing.
Some demonic stamina right
there.
Must have
been a great master debater.
All right, enough of your guys' nasty and like demon stories.
A master demonibator.
Praise, this question is for you. They're making fun of you, Praise. What's your answer? Uh-oh.
No, we're not. We love Praise.
Yeah, likewise. I haven't really seen. I guess that's partly on me. Maybe I should do more accounts and what's going on with the stories out there. I only know a few of them. I do know one though, where they came in as aliens or grave people or grave or what they call slimy grave people, and they lifted them up and they prayed in the name of Jesus, and they fell. They came back down in the bed and they left. So I do know a couple of them, but I need to go into more of them though.
Gotcha. Thanks so much. And Lamed asks, can you ask if Praise believes that jinns exist? Jinns are the Islamic version of demons.
Sure. Just because there are other accounts out there doesn't mean we shouldn't discount them. They could be somehow correlated. And maybe even, so I would say maybe the Islamic, what does they call that? The Quran. Maybe the Quran was actually a fabrication, but the stuff in there could be real. So it's good to have an open mind.
Gotcha. Want to say thanks so much, folks. We are thrilled. Let's see. Okay. Samuel Lilholm says, basically, isn't the method, namely a jury, let's say, making a conclusion based on the evidence in court, so a court case, isn't the method a completely reasonable method to use for this subject, Jim? And if not, then why?
Sure, yeah, it absolutely is. But part of evidence being supported in court is being able to establish a causal link from your evidence to the defendant or the prosecution, you know, whatever you're trying to prove, whether innocence or the guilt, whatever, you can't just say, I found this knife, therefore he's guilty. You have to establish a link. And there is no link between parapsychology and demons. There's no link between claimed exorcisms and demons. I've already established that there is a universalist like concept of possession and a concept of exorcising these demons that are that differ with the desired result.
Gotcha. And Andrew Handelsman, I think we did not get to read his super chat from the other night. He insists we read it now, so we'll read it. I'm confused. He says it's about something about beta or soy, but the only one I see here, Andrew, is it says, Austin, I saw you leave the dollar store with a NASA shirt. What's up with that? So I think that was you're trolling Austin Wits It Gets It. I'm trying to figure out, where's Andrew?
Shoot, I wish I could get a NASA shirt for a dollar. Point me to that thrift store, baby.
I have no idea, Andrew, what you're are you trolling me, Andrew?
He's trolling you and your schmoodiums.
He says beta. But yes, thank you for that. And I have no idea. But want to say thanks so much, everybody. We are thrilled. We appreciate our guests. Thanks so much to Jim and Praise. It's been a true pleasure. You can find them linked in the description to click and find them. And also, want to let you know, we are very excited, folks, to let you know that we will be back this week. You will see, I think it's like, there's Jim Majors's twin brother, John Maddox, will be back tomorrow night. It'll be a tag team debate. It's going to be tremendous. Folks, believe me, you are going to enjoy it. That should be a lot of fun.
Oh, and so, sweet.
Then Wednesday, Erica Gutsick Gibbon will be returning as moderator for an epic debate between her good friend Walker and Stan.
Texas
Truth.
Ranger?
It could be. Then,
awesome! James.
All right. Thank you very much.
I command you, in the name of modern day debate, to subscribe and like.
Thank you very much. Both of you are demonic guests. We appreciate these guys and want to let you know, happy Halloween, folks. We hope you've had a great day and night. Also, though, yes, this Thursday, bottom right of your screen, Marxist versus Capitalist. That should be a juicy one. And so, Andrew Handelsman, thanks so much for your support in the chat, says, hit that like button on the way out. Please do, folks. That does mean a lot. And so thanks so much. We will see you next time, which is up Monday.
Later.
That's right. So thanks so much and have a great rest of your night, folks.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.